Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast. We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm your host, Tyler Frankie. We have a great show lined up for you today. We'll be talking with local entertainer Scott Anderson. He'll talk about how magic helped him brighten the lives of children in army hospitals on the other side of the world, and tell us about the time he even upstaged Robin Williams. For Can Be Then, we'll be looking at a bizarre and fascinating episode involving the Pioneer Sturges family. It's a case that involves mental illness, mysterious death, and mistaken identity. But at least it has a happy ending. But first, the news. That's how many cars an untolled bridge at the Canby Ferry would see daily within 10 years, according to a traffic analysis shared by Clackamas County transportation staff at a meeting with the Board of Commissioners Tuesday afternoon. By comparison, the ferry currently carries about 200 cars a day. This study is probably the end of the road for the idea of building an untolled bridge at that location, as no one at the county is interested in funneling that much traffic onto the rural roads in Canby and West Lynn. A toll bridge is still a possibility, however, as adding a toll does reduce those estimates dramatically. On the plus side, county staff say a bridge at that location would decrease commute time by about 20 minutes a day for the 65% of Canby residents who work in the Portland area. They also believe the $3 million a year generated by tolls would cover the cost of construction, bond payments, operations, and maintenance. On the negative side, residents in the area don't want a bridge, or the increased traffic that would come with it. This is something they have made very clear throughout this process, including at a public meeting at the Canby Public Library this summer attended by an estimated 250 people. Although commissioners are nowhere near to making an official decision, a few of them did share their current thinking. One looming factor in their decision is the fact that if ferry service is continued, the vessel will have to be replaced in 15 to 20 years at an estimated cost of $2 to $3 million. Commissioner Paul Savis said he would be very reluctant to support such an expense. Commissioner Martha Schrader said the county may consider asking the city of Canby to join in subsidizing the ferry, which currently costs about $400,000 more than the revenue it brings in each year.
You know, if that's kind of a tourist area, too, That's what I'm just kind of thinking, that, you know, maybe we need to have a conversation with Canby to say, you know, county, if you want a ferry, we all got to kick in with that.
Share,
I don't know.
Share the wealth.
Share the love,
or
yeah.
The
burden.
The county now expects to finish the feasibility study in January. The findings will be detailed at a public meeting, then a public hearing will be scheduled for residents to voice their opinions before the Board of Commissioners. The Clackamas County Suicide Prevention Coalition will be holding a community listening session at Lee Elementary School next week to hear from Canby residents about suicide prevention. They want to listen to individuals and groups who have been impacted by suicide and deepen their understanding of what puts people in our community at risk and what helps keep them safe, what is working, and what is missing. This will be a 90-minute session where coalition representatives will ask questions about your observations and your ideas about preventing suicide. The conversation will be recorded, but the names and identities of those who participate will be kept confidential. The county is specifically looking for input from local teachers, parents, youths over 18, grandparents, clergy, and faith community members, first responders, and anyone else who is interested. The listening session will be from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Tuesday, October 9th at Lee Elementary. We think some local parents might get a kick out of this story. The Early Learning Hub of Clackamas County is launching the Make a Splash program this month. This program will provide free Oakey rain boots to children ages 6 and younger whose families qualify for income assistance programs. Early Learning Hub officials at the county approached Oakey, a Vancouver, Washington-based company, about the need of young children for rain boots in Clackamas County. Oakey representatives agreed to partner for this program and have been instrumental in its success. For more information about Make a Splash, including a list of the programs that qualify, visit our website, canbynowpod.com. So my guest today is Scott Anderson. He's a local financial advisor, former flight medic and medevac helicopter pilot for the U.S. Army, and a comedian, magician, and all-around entertainer. Scott, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
Good, good. Welcome to the program. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So Scott, you're a magician. So basically you lie to people for a living.
I lie to their face and they love it.
So what?
Oh wait, are you assuming that magic isn't real?
I didn't say that. I know that it's not. No.
I can tell you how I don't make people disappear.
Okay.
I don't do it with magic.
So what sort of traumatic life experiences made you want to do this to lie to people? How did you get into magic, basically?
You know what? I got into magic because of a back injury I received in a training accident while stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington. And so for 6 months, I was going to be worthless to the unit. So
you had to turn to sorcery to heal your back?
Back then, yeah, because they didn't believe in chiropractic care. So that was, you were going out of your own pocket for that. So I got injured, mm-hmm. and they said, you know what, we can't use you for a while, so we're going to send you to DARE school. And you're going to become a DARE officer, mm-hmm. and you're going to teach the DARE program at the five elementary schools.
See, I never knew DARE officers used magic. I didn't know that.
I didn't do any magic at the time.
Oh, okay.
I did no magic at the time.
Okay. None.
And so I went in thinking, oh, this is going to be great. Because one, it's like 6 months of easy, light duty.
Sure.
And two, when
it's
I was
fun.
A kid, yeah, whenever
DARE
the
officers.
Cops, you know, or whenever they showed up to school, you know, that uniform and a gun, they were really cool. But on an Army base, everybody's dad has a uniform and a gun.
That's right.
So
not
anybody special. Yeah. So there was one of my best friends who I grew up with here in Cambie. He used to do this trick with a paperclip. And for years, he would fool us by, you know.
What was the trick?
He would hold a paperclip between his thumb and his forefinger.
Uh-huh.
And his other hand, he'd snap his fingers and just poof, like open his hands up and it would be gone.
Okay.
For years.
Yeah.
Like none of us could ever figure it
right.
out.
Right. That's pretty
and
cool.
And so I remember calling him up, his name's Corey Carey. So I'm sure any of your listeners who were around in the mid-90s, he was quite
Shout
obnoxious.
Out to Corey Carey.
Yeah. And I called him. I said, hey, can you please teach me that trick? These kids are running all over me. You know, and
my guns are not intimidating to
right.
these Army
so he
kids.
Told me what he'd been doing. And if he wasn't like 6'4" and 220 pounds, you know, I would reach to the phone and strangle him.
Right.
I could not believe that for so many years. That's all that was being done.
Right.
And we fell for it every single time.
Yeah.
So I did that as a classroom tool. If the kids were good, I'd do a magic trick for them.
Okay.
But you can only show somebody something so many times before they're not.
You have to expand the act. Yeah.
Yeah. So went to
the
library.
You have to bring in the tigers and things.
Yeah. So then from there, it was magic books, you know, checked out books and whatnot to learn more and more tricks. And then as I was paying for chiropractic care to get better out of my own pocket, because 90s medical care in the Army was wake up 2 hours before you need to wake up and take 800 milligrams of Motrin, then take it when you wake up, then take it before lunch. And
it's come a long way.
They have.
Yeah.
So I was paying out of my own pocket to see a chiropractor. And then every time I learned a new trick, I would also show my chiropractor just because they're fun.
Yeah.
And then he offered me 2 weeks of free care if I did a magic show at his Christmas party for his clientele.
Yeah.
So did that. And then one of his clients was, he was an entertainment agent, small time, had like this whole stable of jump rides and clowns that did balloon animals
nice.
At kids' parties.
Yeah.
And he offered me a side gig. To come work for their little carnival troupe.
Sure.
They wanted me to become a clown. Not that I have anything against clowns, but there's no way any dude or person on the base is going to see me going out as a clown. So I became like their tuxedoed like magician. Like if you wanted an upscale kids party, they would send a magician. So that's kind of how the whole thing just got started.
Oh man, your whole life could have wound up different, man. You could have been the army clown instead of the army magician guy. that's cool. But that is cool that you kind of came to it later in life, because I think other magicians I've talked to, it's like, you know, something that's like their life study.
Yeah,
you know,
I didn't do
really
magic
cool.
when
yeah.
I was younger. I didn't have to because I had friends. Magicians hate that joke,
right.
by the way.
I love it. Yeah. Very nice. So I do want to talk about your service, because that the whole magic thing ties into that a little bit. You were able to, in sort of similar ways with the DARE program, you had some experiences with some kids and some other people, and you were able to use magic to kind of bridge gaps and cultural and even language gaps. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was, I guess, yeah, kind of by accident. But we would...
So you were, you did two tours, one in, two combat tours, one in Afghanistan to start with, and then as a flight medic, and then in Iraq as a medevac pilot, and that was part of your 20 plus year career in the Army and Oregon National Guard.
Yeah, so we got to Afghanistan, and we had done extensive training at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. We were all set to go in there, and we knew that, you know, our primary mission was to rescue wounded soldiers. And then the vast majority of the patients that we were called to pick up were kids from landmines. And culturally, they're a very, very different country than we are. A lot of times, you know, these kids were...
I can't even imagine some of the stuff you've seen. And
yeah, most of them, you know, they're missing limbs, and, you know, life for them is never the same. You know, I mean, imagine the type of medical care one would receive here in the United States, plus the ongoing care. They live a very productive life. There, it's very difficult. And a lot of times the families would contact the hospital through the various channels and say, you know, if the child dies, we want the body. If they live... we don't want them.
Oh my gosh.
And so we'd have these wards in the Army hospitals filled with kids that were just crying for parents that were never going to come. It's really, I don't know, it's
going to make
depressing.
Me cry, man. I thought we were going to have fun here.
It was a rough year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's hard not to relive it all the time.
Sure.
But that's the nature, you know, they have a very hard life.
And this is good, because I think a lot of people don't realize,
you know,
the stuff that you guys went through out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially you guys who were in the medical areas.
Yeah, so very unfortunate. And then one day I just went in there, and like one of the kids was inconsolable, and I did a quick magic trick for that kid, and then it was an instant change in that person's demeanor. And then it just became a thing. If I wasn't on the flight schedule, if I didn't have to work, I was in the hospital entertaining, doing magic tricks for the kids just to get them to smile. We didn't speak the language, so
of course,
a lot of the routines, you know, that I would talk through, like some of those were thrown out, or, you know, but you'd create different ways to do stuff that didn't require a story.
You'd do a lot of pointing or hand gestures and
a
stuff.
A lot more visual. Every now and then we'd get an interpreter that would come through, and then, you know, we could actually, you know, communicate. But it was magic was kind of its own language, you know, because we couldn't
That's
speak
cool.
the same language, but they could understand, you know, what I was doing, and so it was great. Yeah, we had a visit by Robin Williams, and he came out.
Oh, cool.
I got to spend a whole day with him, which was pretty.
What was that
pretty
like?
Neat. I was amazing. I mean, the guy, he was always on, but he was always sneaking flights and headed over to see the troops. A lot of folks don't know that about him.
Yeah.
But as far as like the
I've
military.
Seen some pictures that have surfaced like on Reddit and stuff since he passed away that you know, show some of those you mentioned, the secret visits.
And so anyhow they were giving him a tour in the hospital, and of course he walks in and none of the kids know who
he is.
And he's got this entourage of generals and colonels and stuff behind him, and the medevac crew, we got to hang out with him because he was wanting a helicopter ride, so we were kind of following close in his little group as they were giving him a tour of the hospital.
Yeah.
And so he gets all the way into the ward, and we come walking in, and then I walk in, and all the kids start hooting and hollering and screaming. He turned around, and they were, and you know, it's because they recognized me. I'm the guy that always would come in and perform for them.
Yeah.
But they'd never seen him from anybody.
Yeah.
And so I walked up, and he gave me this
you
look.
You are one of the few people that could say you upstaged Robert Williams.
Well, I patted him on the back, and I said, "It's okay, Mr. Williams. I'm the celebrity in this hospital." And he just kind of did one of those tip of the hat, and he goes, "Well then, proceed."
Oh,
and
nice.
So then I got to do some entertaining with him as the audience for the kids there. And
that's really cool.
Yeah, it was a great memory.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I just want to say you probably could have made some connections if you had gone the clown route, but you had to go with magic. So I think that would have.
I don't know. Clowns are equated to serial killers. I don't even know. Do people do clowns anymore? Like, most folks are just scared of them.
I saw one in town last week. Yeah, just walking down the street. I don't know what a clown does anymore, but they are still out there. Hopefully, they're not all serial killers. That would be scary. So you have a show coming up here in town. Is it your second Operation Magic benefit show, or
no? It'll be the third one. Okay, can be. I mean, we've done this hundreds of times.
Sure,
but.
So it's here in a couple weeks,
October 13th,
6:30, Canby Fine Arts Center.
Yeah, I'm going to get split in two.
Oh, nice.
We're going to levitate a random member of the audience. Some minds will probably get read.
To just kind of sum up the act a little bit, you started to kind of name specific tricks, but...
So it's a family Las Vegas style magic and illusion show.
Yeah.
Is what it is. So we got
a
lot of big props.
Can you tie in a little bit of the military?
I do.
Yeah.
Not as much as I used to.
Okay.
It's a little bit lighter, but you know, it got pretty dark. Like not anything bad,
right.
But I would delve more into like the conversation we touched here dealing with those kids. And you know, I just think that the climate of this country is dark enough.
Sure.
They don't need me to like show, oh yeah, well look how bad these folks have it. So a lot of that stuff we've lightened up a bit, and one, also make a lot more kid friendly. Nobody wants to take their kids to a magic show and hear some dude talking about, you know, I had to pick up these kids that were mortally wounded.
Right.
It worked. I mean, that worked really well for an adult audience, right. You know, or like in a Vegas, Los Angeles type scenario, but not for a local family show. A lot of the tricks, the stories, you know, magicians are storytellers as well. I mean, they do it visually, but a lot of the routines are based on real life events that have happened, you know, during my time overseas.
Sure. Well, I do appreciate, and that makes sense, you know, lightening up the show, because it's definitely a tougher time for a lot of people, just politically and culturally, stuff that's going on. But I do appreciate you, being willing to revisit some of that, because it's an important part of your story. And like I said, I would hate for people to forget, you know, what it was like for you guys over there. Just appreciate you being willing to share.
It wasn't all bad.
Right.
No. We definitely had fun wasting a lot of your tax dollars.
Yeah, well, that's good to know, too. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thanks so much, Scott, for being on. Really appreciate it. You guys definitely check out the show. Where can people find tickets?
Tickets are found on Eventbrite. Unfortunately, the link is like 1,000 characters long.
Right.
But if you go to eventbrite.com, Google Canby Magic Show, it should pop up.
Yeah.
You can also get them at Cutsforth's Thriftway here in town.
Cool.
Between the hours of 10 to 6 at their customer service.
So. Nice, and we'll be putting that link out through our social media if people want to be looking for that. So, okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Canby then. Stay tuned. Based on real events, the 2008 film Changeling tells the story of a single mother whose son is abducted. Police later return a boy whom they claim is her son, but she does not recognize him. When she refuses to accept the imposter, the authorities have her committed to a mental institution. A similar story, albeit one with a much older child and a much happier ending, happened right here in Canby in 1915. 2 years earlier, in 1913, Oscar W. Sturgis, a well-known Clackamas County pioneer and Canby farmer, made a very difficult decision. He had his 40-year-old son, Charlie, committed to the state insane asylum in Salem. We don't know the exact circumstances of this decision, but we know Oscar Sturgis was in his 70s. His wife, 15 years younger, was also in poor health. It's a reasonable assumption that the Sturgises were unable to provide the level of care that Charlie needed. The Oregon State Hospital in the early 1900s was a dark and infamous place, which is not unusual in a time when mental illness was greatly feared and poorly understood. The hospital was underfunded and overcrowded. Later, its staff would participate in the eugenics movement, sterilizing more than 2,600 patients over the years, and experimented with practices now considered barbaric, including electroshock therapy and insulin shock therapy, where patients were repeatedly treated with large enough doses of insulin to induce daily comas. Is it any wonder that in April 1915, less than 2 years after he'd been institutionalized, Charlie Sturgis escaped from the Oregon State Hospital? It also was probably not surprising to local officials when a body, an apparent murder victim, turned up in the mountains near Eugene, matching Charlie's description and wearing his hospital-issued clothing. Back in Canby, the Sturgises were informed of the gruesome discovery, and they sent a family friend, A.J. Burdett, to view the corpse. He positively identified it as Charlie Sturgis. The body was transported back home and laid to rest at a family plot at the Canby Oddfellows Cemetery. Months passed, and the family worked to move on and put the sad episode behind them. As the holidays drew near, one can only imagine how heavily the tragic loss of their ill son must have weighed on his parents' hearts. I can only guess that they must surely have blamed themselves for his death. Then, on November 21st, 4 days before Thanksgiving, a knock came on the Sturgis door. It was Charlie Sturgis, miraculously alive, smiling, and in good health, mind and body. The door had been answered by his sister, Bertha Hurst, who was dumbfounded to see the man she'd assumed had been buried months ago, standing before her. When she recovered, she took Charlie to his old room, then went to break the news to their mother. She knew she had to handle this carefully, given her mother's fragile state of health. She asked, "Can you stand some news which might be a little shock?" "Yes, I guess so, but what is it?" her mother replied. She explained that her brother was not dead, in fact, had just come home, and her mother promptly fainted. "We had to put her to bed and call Dr. Dedham," Bertha later recalled. When Oscar Sturgis was told the news, he had the exact same reaction. Charlie, of course, had no idea that he'd been pronounced dead, that he'd had a funeral, that there was even a body in a cemetery with a tombstone bearing his name, and his sister was reluctant to tell him for fear of the effect that this would have on his mental state. For the same reason, he was not told of the impact his return had had on his parents. "Everything possible is being done to prevent Charles Sturgis from becoming excited," one newspaper noted. The truth slowly emerged over the next several days. After escaping the state hospital, Charlie had traveled to Washington State, where he'd worked in various towns before deciding he missed home and wanted to see his family. But this didn't answer the big question. Who was the man buried in the Sturgis plot? And why was he wearing Charlie's clothes, down to the patient number he'd been issued at the state hospital? Part of this was eventually answered when Charlie explained that it had actually been a group who'd escaped the institution in April of that year, and they'd all traded clothes before splitting up in order to confuse any authorities that they encountered. But as to who he was and how he met his grisly fate, we'll probably never know. Unfortunately, with the limited resources available to us, we were unable to pick up any threads of this fascinating story after 1915. If you know anything about what became of Charles Sturgis and his family, please let us know. You can reach me at info@canbynowpod.com. Upcoming events this weekend. We've got a lot going on in Canby. Music by the Fireplace at Canby Public Library from 11 to 2. Listen to the acoustic stylings of local musician Michael O'Rear while you check out some fall reading recommendations or return that long overdue library book. Last time I tried singing in the library, they just shushed me, but whatever. At 4 p.m., come see the grand opening of the new Industrial Technology Center at Clackamas Community College. Following a short program, there will be refreshments, machine demonstrations, and tours of the new facility. Then head downtown for Canby Main Street's monthly First Friday event. Some highlights include Prep and Pour. Stop by Christina Gutierrez Farmers Insurance Agency for free wine and beer tasting, while Canby Fire provides tips on how to prepare an emergency survival kit for your home, car, and office. I say no emergency preparedness kit is complete without wine and beer, but that's just me. At 7 p.m., Gwen's Coffee House will be hosting local musician Mark Davis, and the Book Nook will host a meet and greet with local author Linda K. Richardson. For a complete list of First Friday promotions and activities, visit our website, canbenowpod.com. On Saturday, check out the Canby Historical Society's annual Fall Flea Market at the main pavilion of the Clackamas County Fairgrounds. And while you're there, ask them if they know anything about Charles Sturgis. The flea market will be open from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. At 11 a.m., enter Cambio and Storytime in Spanish at the Canby Public Library. Fine-tune your language skills with native English and Spanish speakers. And finally, at 3 o'clock, the Pride of Portland Chorus will be the Canby Fine Arts Center. Come show your support for the chorus as they prepare to head to St. Louis for the Sweet Adelines International Contest. Also featured will be Bridgetown Sound and the Allegro Studio Dancer. Okay, that'll wrap up our show for today. I'm your host, Tyler Franke. Our producer is Tyler Clausen. Special thanks to our guest today, Scott Anderson. Hey, if you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. Be sure to catch our show on Monday. We'll be sitting down with John Drott to talk about the lineup for the upcoming Canby Film Festival. They're the largest and most prestigious film festival in Canby. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook and Twitter at CanBeNow or on our website, canbenowpod.com. Thanks for listening.